I must confess this morning that my confidence level is pretty low. It never is really high when you get up to stand before a crowd of people, and it's a good thing because it's not about me, it's God's message. If you would, you can turn in your Bibles this morning to 1 Corinthians 13. And I've titled the message this morning, The Character of Charity. The Character of Charity. How old do you have to be before, or when you need to start practicing charity or love? Is there an age that you don't have to use it or don't need it? And how old do you have to be when you can quit? Is there an age range for this? Is there a maturity range? No, we would all say no, there's not. It's necessary for everyone from the youngest to the oldest, probably. Even though the little babies that come, they bring a certain amount of natural, adorableness with them, that it's not hard to love a little baby. It's maybe a little harder to love a obnoxious brat, you know? You ever seen one of those? You ever seen a brat? Have you ever been a brat? I've been accused of being one, especially when I was about 8 years old, 9 years old. Truth be told, I think I was a little terrorist. And my wife would say I never grew out of it. But I hope I have grown a little bit. Actually, she didn't say that. I made that up a little bit, but I think some days she thinks that. But I came across an article recently. This was right before Valentine's Day, and it was, I don't know where it was exactly, but it was from a very cynical person writing about the upcoming Valentine's Day. And someone, I think this person, I don't know if it was a man or a woman who wrote it, had been through a series of disappointments in life. And their thought was that Valentine's Day is overrated. Taking the time to send flowers, a card, a gift, to express love to somebody who was overrated. And their thought was that why go to the trouble of doing this when the chances of that being of being with that person are so low within a year. Their answer to that was to not bother and to get a gallon of ice cream and sit on the couch and eat it with a fork all by yourself and don't worry about sending it to anyone else or sharing it with anyone else. And I thought, you know what? That is a very selfish way to look at life and love and whatever. It's very selfish. And I can understand, you know, if you've been disappointed and you've been hurt, and there's in life, there are so many ways that we try to put walls up and barriers up and all that. And I can understand that. But really, selfishness is not the agape form of love. It's more what I can get out of it and the feeling that goes along with it, but it's not really the sacrificial kind of, it's not how you experience sacrificial love. I'm just going to read, I'd like to invite your attention to 1 Corinthians 13, verse 1, and we'll read the chapter here, and then we'll go down, make hopefully some practical comments on that. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know, even as also I am known. And now abideth, right now, we have faith, hope, and charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity. And I don't know if you caught all this, but it explains the hope, it explains faith, and it explains charity. But charity, or love, is in the greatest detail. When we have love or charity, charity endures beyond the grave. In heaven, in eternity, or in heaven, charity continues. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels. You know, I'm sure we have people in here that are really good speakers. People that have a way of making words come alive. They can move and persuade and sell. Good salesmen. Good speakers. Good orators. Just really good with words. It's interesting to listen to a person who is, to a preacher who is able to share and make things come alive. I love to listen to somebody like that. And I love to hear those words. And yet, even if I can persuade the opinions of the stubbornest people, if I can even sell the most unsellable items, without charity, I am just like a tin can making a racket. And who loves to hear a tin can make a racket? Besides a little boy. Who loves that? Nobody does. I mean, I don't know that many people like that. Without charity, it's nothing. But what if, I'm sure we have people here, or you know of someone, that can explain the book of Revelations and make it clear, make it come alive, according to their interpretation anyway, and make sense. But if I can prophesy like nobody else, if I can understand the mysteries and the revelations and the fountain and be the fountain of knowledge on any given subject, even if I'm a person of tremendous faith and have the reputation as someone who can pray and have their prayers answered, even if I have a reputation as a person of God, without charity, I am nothing. Nothing! And we have people that we know, or maybe we are one, that are the most generous that you will ever meet in your whole life. And maybe I would give you my most precious possession, even if it was the shirt off my back. It was the only one I had. Or maybe I'm so generous that I would give myself, give my life, give my body to be burned, as it says. I'd give you my pickup. I'd give you my house. I'd give you whatever I had. You know, I'd just give it away, give it to you, because I'm so generous. And it makes me feel good, whatever. But if I don't have any charity or I don't have any love, what does it doesn't give me any brownie points. Even if I'm willing to sacrifice all my time to work at church every Saturday, even if I give all my money in the offering and all my time and live a life of poverty, or drive old and worn out vehicles because of my compulsive giving, and even if I listen to my wife tell me to stop giving, but I give anyway, and it causes family stress, but I do it anyway, I don't have any love, it gains us nothing. If it causes family stress, it's a problem. But even if it doesn't cause family stress and it's a good and we're united on it, but we do it because of what it gives us and we don't love, it doesn't give us anything. There's no benefit. And so what is charity? You know, the chapter opens with the things that you could do that you would think would offset some of that, but it doesn't. So what is charity? Well, charity is love. And you know, there is the form of love I'd like to talk about is what we call agape love. And agape love is the sacrificial love. It's the love that is a commitment. And agape love does not always feel good. Maybe rarely does it feel good. I don't know if agape love is a feeling at all. I'll be speaking to the husbands, to you husbands today, us husbands, and to you wives. To you, to us as a church family, to all, everybody, it applies to all of us. But man, when we got married, the feelings were high, weren't they, on your wedding day, mostly. For me, they were. Very much. It was a very easy thing to love my wife. And it was easy to be excited about loving her. It was easy to write a card or to send flowers or to do whatever we needed to do to make it work. And yet there are times in our courtship that people would tell us that, you know, it's not always going to be that way. It's not always going to be that way. Oh, yeah. Well, for us, it will be. Well, it's not always that way. And I'm sure you know that. You've probably experienced that. That sometimes it's a choice. And that does not mean that love is gone when the feeling is gone. But it does open the door for some negative things to happen if we are not willing to make that choice to love, to make that commitment, whether we feel like it or not. And that's what agape love is, and that's a very basic version of it. Agape love is just a choice to love. It's to love even though we don't feel anything in return. And Christ loved us that way, because we did not love him He loved us before we loved him. So he extended love without us loving in return. And we are husbands, we are commanded to love our wife with the same love. Love as Christ loved the church. So charity, or love, suffereth long. It's long-suffering. It's kind. It envieth not. It vaunteth not itself, or is not puffed up. It doesn't put itself forward. It doesn't behave unseemly. It doesn't seek its own. It's not easily provoked. Doesn't think evil. Thinketh no evil. Rejoiceth not in iniquity. Rejoiceth in the truth. It beareth all things. Believeth all things. Hopeth all things. Endureth all things. And it's eternal. Charity suffereth long. You know, that long suffering means it has the thought of being long spirited. Long suffering, long spirited. Have you ever been in a situation that is bad? Maybe you're starting a new business and the profits are negative. And you are trying hard. You stick with it because you have hope that they will turn around in the future. That's an example of being long-spirited or long-suffering. You stick with a situation because you recognize the long-term potential, the longer than the here and now. That's long-suffering. Long-spirited or long-suffering or patient, you recognize that there is hope for this individual or situation in spite of failures. In spite of the problems that we're facing right now, there's hope for that. It's looking beyond right now. Even chronic or multiple failures, long-suffering characteristic doesn't write the situation or the people off. And so for husbands, to be long-suffering means to be patient with your wife, even if she says something hurtful or doesn't give you the recognition that you feel you deserve. Or she buys something that you feel is unnecessary. I don't think that probably never happens to anyone. But maybe you bought something that you felt was unnecessary. That's a good example of being long-suffering. Okay, so you thought it was not a good idea. What are you going to do about it? Charity loves even in these situations. But then wives. Of course, I don't know. I've never been a wife, so I don't know all the things that wives will feel. But I know that I have given my wife plenty of opportunity to be long-suffering with me. But be patient and love your husband when he sins or fails in his life or responsibility. And you know, there's things that happen in life where we tend to be thoughtless. And maybe we forget an important holiday. Or we fail to step up like we should in our leadership responsibility. And it's important for long-suffering to be extended, to recognize that there's potential, even though we don't feel like it at the moment. Parents, you know, your children give you the opportunity to be long-suffering as well, especially the ones that you feel have a lot of growing up to do. And not just the ones that you feel have a lot of growing up to do, but the ones that you know better and still act like they shouldn't. Are we going to be long-suffering with our children and take the time to train and not, like an uncle or a relative of mine, I don't know if it was an uncle, a relative of mine, was just ticking off the days until his children would be old enough to leave. I don't know. I was glad that my parents didn't do that to me, that just wishing for me to leave so that they could get on with life. At least if they did, they didn't tell me about it. And do I have the opportunity to do that, to be long-spirited or long-suffering with my children and train them now? And brothers and sisters, in the body of Christ, we have the ample opportunity to exercise long-suffering with each other. You know, there's frictions in life. As we have relationships with people, there's going to be times when we have friction. And friction is often a indication of personality rubs or negative things that affect us that we can let rub us the wrong way. And long-suffering is an opportunity there. Charity is kind. That's another thing. But kind goes along with long-suffering. Kind just simply means that it's mild and not harsh. It's sweet, not bitter. And it goes with long-suffering. Kind is where long-suffering is more a state of mind or a perspective. Kindness is maybe more of a response or an action. And what I was just illustrating would probably be more examples of the kindness outworking in a long-suffering perspective. We would call it long-suffering, but kindness would be the action there. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them, is what Colossians says. Kindness is the sweetness of love that is opposite to the harshness of bitterness. And wives, you would appreciate that response much better. You appreciate it, especially if you backed the car out of the garage right into a telephone pole, and then you went and told your wife about it, I mean your husband about it. It would be much easier. How do I say it? It's more rewarding if the response is one of kindness and not of harshness or bitterness. That's a small thing. It's oftentimes easier to accept the dramatic bumps into the telephone pole with a vehicle, or you know, just physical outworking or physical things that happen to us, circumstances that happen, than it is some of the little rubs of relationship. Probably more things are, more little seeds of bitterness are start when, you have all the little adjustments in marriage. Just little things like if your clothes, you don't put your clothes away, they just lay around on the floor. That would be, I've heard one wife say that would be a real problem. Or toothpaste that is left laying around. Or I even heard one where they had an argument about the toilet paper. Should it come down on the outside or the inside of the roll? Well, those are little things, but they are so easy to turn into a into a rub that allows bitterness or friction to start. But kindness moderates that. And for wives, you know, kindness moderates the responses that could be sharp or demanding or belittling. You know, all of us husbands have this thing called ego, and we just are born with it. And some of us have more than others, maybe, but we all have it. And there's something in us that brings out the best in us or the better part in us if our wife is supportive and admiring, not demanding or belittling or sharp. That tends to bring out the bitterness in us or the harshness, maybe. And it's not, even if the circumstances are not ideal for us, it still doesn't give us the excuse to be unkind or harsh. But in brotherhood, kindness is the soft answer that turns away wrath. I'm going to keep moving here. I don't want to get too bogged down there. But kindness is the opposite of bitterness, we'll say. It's a moderating influence there, and it goes very well with long-suffering. Another characteristic of charity is it envieth not. Envy is defined as to burn with zeal, to be heated or boil with envy, hatred, or anger. And jealousy or envy can be that. You know, there's been situations, I'm sure, where we have, where we felt heated up inside. We hear details of a situation, or we hear details about something or someone or whatever, and it heats our emotions up. And sometimes they don't ever cool off. They just stay there in that heated up state. But, you know, do I have a problem with talents my wife has that I feel might diminish my worth in her eyes? I don't know if that's a problem or not, but it could be. You know, sometimes God has given us different talents, and my wife is better at quite a few things than what I am. And is it something that I look at as a threat, or do I look at it as God giving that as a help to me for my deficiencies? Am I willing to love anyway? You know, charity envieth not. And wives, is there a struggle with envy when husband gets recognition for his work and effort while you're at home taking care of the little details or the unseen details or the behind the scenes things? You know, I've felt already that it's a little, my wife should receive much more recognition than what I do, because without her, I would never be able to do what I can do. If I had to spend all the time at home washing my clothes and making meals and cleaning the house and ironing my shirts and all that, it would take probably 2/3 of the day. And then what would I do with? But God has given her as a helper, and we work together. Without me, she would have to work for her living, and she would have to do more. God has made it us to work together, but unfortunately, I have more of a public profile than my wife does, and so naturally, I would get more recognition than she does. And it should be the other way around, because she does so much. Anyway, is there a problem with feeling jealous? Charity envieth not. Brotherhood is in our relationship as a brother, as brothers and sisters, is there a struggle with being envious of somebody else who I might feel has more talents than me, or gets more recognition, or in some way life seems to treat better? Maybe their circumstances have not been such as mine, and they're able to seem to sail through life without getting bogged down with the difficult situations. Job could have felt that way. You know, his friends didn't have boils. His friends didn't look different. I'll leave that with you to think on. Charity, the next one, charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. It doesn't brag or excessively extol its own self. Do I commend my wife for what I see in her life? Am I willing to be an encourager and a supporter and encourage my wife? Or others that I come in contact with? You know, there's so many people that we come in contact with. But in our own marriages, in our homes, as a husband, do I commend my wife for what I see in her life and the efforts that she puts into life? Even if I feel I express it to her more often than she does to me. Or the wives, do I express appreciation for what I see in my husband and the efforts he puts into life? I don't know, you can fill in the blanks here. Commendation and encouragement in the brotherhood is a vital part of building each other up and strengthening our faith. It's more than just commendation, but commendation is a way of building each other up. Charity does not behave itself unseemly. It acts in a controlled manner. There's ways that we act that are seemly, and there's ways that are unseemly. Charity is one that is a fruit or a characteristic that acts in a controlled manner. There's self-discipline involved. There's civility. There is control. That's part of charity. Charity does not seek its own. It's unselfish. And we talked about the agape form of love. An unselfish love does not sit on the couch and eat a whole gallon of ice cream with a fork and not share it with anybody else. You know, charity seeks the welfare of my wife. It looks forward, or it looks for ways to elevate, to build up, to commend, even if it means a sacrifice on my part. It's not easily provoked. No, charity is not easily provoked. And it goes along with the long-suffering and being long-spirited. But not easily provoked. You know, there are so many opportunities to be provoked. And as I exercise charity, I will not provoke, and I will not be easily provoked. If I make that choice not to be. And being provoked well, some of us have quick tempers. I have a quick temper, with God's help I try to work with that, keep it under control. But I do have a quick temper, and being provoked is very easy to do. And it's when I get provoked, it's easy to say things that are not nice. But part of being not easily provoked is to think first and speak later. We can't always control the emotions that come, but sometimes we can keep our mouth shut and wait till we have a more rational thought process before speaking. And it also involves apologizing and asking for forgiveness. Thinketh no evil. Charity thinketh no evil. You know, for us husbands, there's going to be times when love is all about commitment and choice and not about feelings. There's going to be times when we are going to be tested in making, in exercising love, even if we don't feel like it. The opportunity to let bitter thoughts and hurts germinate is very, very real. Especially at that time when your commitment is tested, when your love is tested, relationship, bitter thoughts have a very fertile seedbed to germinate. Am I willing to forgive and think no evil? Wives, there will be ample opportunity for you to exercise forgiveness and love as well. Sometimes your husband will be downright thoughtless, and the hurts will or can happen. Am I willing to forgive and think no evil and exercise love in this way? You know, for brotherhood, it's the same thing. You know, exercising, thinking no evil is a choice. We have so many opportunities to receive gossip, and oftentimes when we receive information about somebody from someone, we form an opinion about that. And an opinion can turn into an attitude, and an attitude that's negative can turn into bitterness after a while. Anyway, it's a cycle, but it starts like it's like a seed that can germinate. We have the opportunity to think no evil, which is exercising charity. Life gives many opportunities to forgive and to think no evil, and I'm just going to leave it as a challenge to take that opportunity and think no evil. Love also rejoiceth not in iniquity, but it rejoiceth in the truth. Iniquity is injustice. Have you ever seen somebody that you felt deserved something to happen to them? You were envious of them, maybe, or jealous, and you, when something happened to them, you kind of thought that was what served them right. Whether it did or it didn't, you had an opinion about a certain person, or an opinion about them. But when something bad happened, or maybe an injustice happened to them, and you kind of felt good about it because they really needed it to bring them down. Well, charity rejoiceth not in iniquity. It rejoiceth not in injustice. Another form of iniquity is unrighteousness, or perverseness, something that's twisted. That's another definition of iniquity. Injustice or unrighteousness. And charity does not rejoice in either of that, any of that. But charity rejoiceth in the truth. It rejoices when someone is serving the Lord. It rejoices when somebody else is making right choices, is living in integrity. It rejoices when somebody else is doing something right. You know, charity also beareth all things. You know what the definition of beareth is? At least according to the Strong's. It's to cover with silence, to roof over, And for in a marriage relationship, there's many times when it's very charitable to keep silent. For husbands and wives. You know, there's things, we know flaws about someone, the person that we live with. We know lots of flaws about them. We know their character flaws very well. But that doesn't mean that we need to tell people about it. And beareth all things is to roof over that, to cover it with silence. And the brotherhood is the same way. There's things that happen in a brotherhood. There's confessions made sometimes. There's things that happen that it's good to forgive, and it's good to cover it with silence. Even if the nosy neighbor wants to know, or the nosy person from another church or whatever, you don't necessarily have to know, always. But charity beareth all things, and believeth all things. Believeth is to trust, to give credibility to. And husbands, do you trust your wife's opinions? Do I trust my wife's opinions? Do I listen to her ideas? Do I seek her advice on things? Do I give credibility to her skepticism of my ideas and dreams? I don't know if you've ever had a good idea. I mean, one of the best ideas in the whole world, and you tell your wife about it, and she's like, Do you ever do that? I've had some really good ideas that have been met with skepticism, and it's where we start, where I have a test. I have a choice to make. Do I give credibility to the skepticism? Actually, it's good that your wife is skeptical of some of your good ideas, because if you exercised all your good ideas, it could be a problem. At least if you have lots of them. But do I give credibility? Do I trust my wife's intuition? Or do I trust my wife's skepticism? Am I willing to at least listen to it and work through it with her? And am I willing to lay down my opinions at times because of that skepticism? And I'm not saying that all of you wives should be skeptical of everything just because you feel like being contrary. That's not at all what I'm saying. But sometimes God gives a woman an intuition that is, she doesn't even know anything about the situation, but she doesn't feel good about it. And you know, there's some of that, that it's good to have a check there, to look at the situation, pray about the situation together, and work through it. As you wives, do you trust, or do I trust my husband and believe in him? That's maybe a whole another subject there, but charity believeth all things. It's trusting. It's not overly cynical. It's not cynical. Charity is not cynical. And in brotherhood, do we trust each other and give credibility to others' perspectives? Are we willing to give credibility to somebody who we don't appreciate very much? Probably has a great deal of bearing on our charity. Hopeth all things. You know, charity hopeth all things. And hopeth is an expectation. In our life, our Christian life, we live this life with hope that there is a future. When I say hope, I'm talking about the optimism that goes with the faith or the belief. We believe by faith that God will fulfill his promise. But because we believe that, it gives us a hope that we are not of this life only. That the sacrifices that we make and the trials that we make have a purpose. And that hope is the spark that keeps us, that keeps life with purpose. And charity endureth all things. It's patient. Charity is also eternal. It goes into the next life. And in heaven, there's no tears, but there's lots of love. And it's eternal. You know, as I thought of this, there are so many areas in my life that are maybe lacking in charity. And especially with my family, maybe people that I love. There's times when there's thin spots and the charity gets really thin. The love is thin. And I want to sit on the couch and eat the ice cream all by myself. I've never done that, even though I look like it. I never have. But there are many people that would love to just shut everybody else out of their life. Or maybe there's some people that would like to do that. And not have to deal with relationships. But God has created us as spirits in His image. He's given us a spirit. And He's created us in His image that is on this earth and in heaven is all relational. And charity is all very necessary to make relationships work. I think I'll just leave it with that. Let's bow our heads for prayer.